God is spirit. Therefore, the language of spirit must be and is spiritual. Christian Science attaches no physical nature and significance to the supreme being or his manifestation. Mortals alone do this. God's essential language is spoken of in the last chapter of Mark's Gospel as the new tongue, the spiritual meaning of which is attained through signs following. Ear hath not heard, nor hath lip spoken, the pure language of spirit. Our Master taught spirituality by similitudes and parables. As a divine student, he unfolded God to man, illustrating and demonstrating life and truth in himself and by his power over the sick and sinning. Human theories are inadequate to interpret the divine principle involved in the miracles, marvels wrought by Jesus, and especially in his mighty crowning, unparalleled, and triumphant exit from the flesh. Evidence drawn from the five physical senses relates solely to human reason, and because of opacity to the true light, human reason dimly reflects and feebly transmits Jesus' works and words. Truth is a revelation. Jesus bade his disciples beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees, which he defined as human doctrines. His parable of the leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal, till the whole was leavened, impels the inference that the spiritual leaven signifies the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation, an inference far above the merely ecclesiastical and formal applications of the illustration. Did not this parable point a moral with a prophecy, foretelling the second appearing in the flesh of the Christ, truth, hidden in sacred secrecy from the visible world? Ages pass, but this leaven of truth is ever at work. It must destroy the entire mass of error, and so be eternally glorified in man's spiritual freedom. In their spiritual significance, science, theology, and medicine are means of divine thought, which include spiritual laws emanating from the invisible and infinite power and grace. The parable may import that these spiritual laws, perverted by a perverse material sense of law, are metaphysically presented as 3 measures of meal, that is, 3 modes of mortal thought. In all mortal forms of thought, dust is dignified as the natural status of men and things, and modes of material motion are honored with the name of laws. This continues until the leaven of spirit changes the whole of mortal thought, as yeast changes the chemical properties of meal. The definitions of material law, as given by natural science, represent a kingdom necessarily divided against itself, because these definitions portray law as physical, not spiritual. Therefore, they contradict the divine decrees and violate the law of love, in which nature and God are one, and the natural order of heaven comes down to earth. When we endow matter with vague spiritual power, that is, when we do so in our theories, for of course we cannot really endow matter with what it does not and cannot possess, we disown the Almighty, for such theories lead to one of 2 things. They either presuppose the self-evolution and self-government of matter, or else they assume that matter is the product of spirit. To seize the first horn of this dilemma and consider matter as a power in and of itself is to leave the Creator out of his own universe, while to grasp the other horn of the dilemma and regard God as the creator of matter is not only to make him responsible for all disasters, physical and moral, but to announce him as their source, thereby making him guilty of maintaining perpetual misrule in the form and under the name of natural law. In one sense, God is identical with nature, but this nature is spiritual and is not expressed in matter. The lawgiver, whose lightning palsies or prostrates in death the child at prayer, is not the divine ideal of omnipresent love. God is natural good and is represented only by the idea of goodness, while evil should be regarded as unnatural because it is opposed to the nature of spirit God. In viewing the sunrise, one finds that it contradicts the evidence before the senses to believe that the earth is in motion and the sun at rest. As astronomy reverses the human perception of the movement of the solar system, so Christian Science reverses the seeming relation of soul and body and makes body tributary to mind. Thus it is with man, who is but the humble servant of the restful mind, though it seems otherwise to finite sense. But we shall never understand this while we admit that soul is in body or mind in matter, and that man is included in non-intelligence. Soul or spirit is God, unchangeable and eternal, and man coexists with and reflects soul, God, for man is God's image. Science reverses the false testimony of the physical senses, and by this reversal, mortals arrive at the fundamental facts of being. Then the question inevitably arises, is a man sick if the material senses indicate that he is in good health? No, for matter can make no conditions for man. And is he well if the senses say he is sick? Yes, he is well in science, in which health is normal and disease is abnormal. Health is not a condition of matter, but of mind. Nor can the material senses bear reliable testimony on the subject of health. The science of mind healing shows it to be impossible for aught but mind to testify truly or to exhibit the real status of man. Therefore, the divine principle of science, reversing the testimony of the physical senses, reveals man as harmoniously existent in truth, which is the only basis of health. And thus science denies all disease, heals the sick, overthrows false evidence, and refutes materialistic logic. Any conclusion, pro or con, deduced from supposed sensation in matter or from matter's supposed consciousness of health or disease, instead of reversing the testimony of the physical senses, confirms that testimony as legitimate and so leads to disease. When Columbus gave freer breath to the globe, ignorance and superstition chained the limbs of the brave old navigator, and disgrace and starvation stared him in the face. But sterner still would have been his fate if his discovery had undermined the favorite inclinations of a sensuous philosophy. Copernicus mapped out the stellar system, and before he spake, Astrography was chaotic, and the heavenly fields were incorrectly explored. The Chaldean wise men read in the stars the fate of empires and the fortunes of men. Though no higher revelation than the horoscope was to them displayed upon the Imperium, earth and heaven were bright, and bird and blossom were glad in God's perennial and happy sunshine, golden with truth. So we have goodness and beauty to gladden the heart. But man, left to the hypotheses of material sense unexplained by science, is as the wandering comet or the desolate star, a weary searcher for a viewless home. The earth's diurnal rotation is invisible to the physical eye, and the sun seems to move from east to west instead of the earth from west to east. Until rebuked by clearer views of the everlasting facts, this false testimony of the eye deluded the judgment and induced false conclusions. Science shows appearances often to be erroneous and corrects these errors by the simple rule that the greater controls the lesser. The sun is the central stillness, so far as our solar system is concerned, and the earth revolves about the sun once a year, besides turning daily on its own axis. As thus indicated, astronomical order imitates the action of divine principle, and the universe, the reflection of God, is thus brought nearer the spiritual fact, and is allied to divine science as displayed in the everlasting government of the universe. The evidence of the physical senses often reverses the real science of being, and so creates a reign of discord, assigning seeming power to sin, sickness, and death. But the great facts of life, rightly understood, defeat this triad of errors, contradict their false witnesses, and reveal the kingdom of heaven, the actual reign of harmony on earth. The material senses' reversal of the science of soul was practically exposed 1900 years ago by the demonstrations of Jesus. Yet these so-called senses still make mortal mind tributary to mortal body and ordain certain sections of matter, such as brain and nerves, as the seats of pain and pleasure, from which matter reports to this so-called mind its status of happiness or misery. The optical focus is another proof of the illusion of material sense. On the eye's retina, sky and treetops apparently join hands, clouds and ocean meet and mingle. The barometer, that little prophet of storm and sunshine, denying the testimony of the senses, points to fair weather in the midst of murky clouds and drenching rain. Experience is full of instances of similar illusions, which every thinker can recall for himself. To material sense, the severance of the jugular vein takes away life. But to spiritual sense and in science, life goes on unchanged and being is eternal. Temporal life is a false sense of existence. Our theories make the same mistake regarding soul and body that Ptolemy made regarding the solar system. They insist that soul is in body and mind therefore tributary to matter. Astronomical science has destroyed the false theory as to the relations of the celestial bodies, and Christian science will surely destroy the greater error as to our terrestrial bodies. The true idea and principle of man will then appear. The Ptolemaic blunder could not affect the harmony of being, as does the error relating to soul and body, which reverses the order of science and assigns to matter the power and prerogative of spirit, so that man becomes the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. The verity of mind shows conclusively how it is that matter seems to be but is not. Divine science, rising above physical theories, excludes matter, resolves things into thoughts, and replaces the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas. The term Christian Science was introduced by the author to designate the scientific system of divine healing. The revelation consists of two parts. One, the discovery of this divine science of mind healing through a spiritual sense of the scriptures and through the teachings of the Comforter as promised by the Master. Two, the proof by present demonstration that the so-called miracles of Jesus did not specially belong to a dispensation now ended, but that they illustrated an ever-operative divine principle. The operation of this principle indicates the eternality of the scientific order and continuity of being. Christian Science differs from material science, but not on that account is it less scientific. On the contrary, Christian Science is preeminently scientific, being based on truth, the principle of all science. Physical science, so-called, is human knowledge, a law of mortal mind, a blind belief, a Samson shorn of his strength. When this human belief lacks organizations to support it, its foundations are gone. Having neither moral might, spiritual basis, nor holy principle of its own, this belief mistakes effect for cause and seeks to find life and intelligence in matter, thus limiting life and holding fast to discord and death. In a word, human belief is a blind conclusion from material reasoning. This is a mortal, finite sense of things, which immortal spirit silences forever. The universe, like man, is to be interpreted by science from its divine principle, God, and then it can be understood. But when explained on the basis of physical sense and represented as subject to growth, maturity, and decay, the universe, like man, is and must continue to be an enigma. Adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind. They belong to divine principle and support the equipoise of that thought force which launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, "Thus far and no farther." Spirit is the life, substance, and continuity of all things. We tread on forces, withdraw them, and creation must collapse. Human knowledge calls them forces of matter, but divine science declares that they belong wholly to divine mind, are inherent in this mind, and so restores them to their rightful home and classification. The elements and functions of the physical body and of the physical world will change as mortal mind changes its beliefs. What is now considered the best condition for organic and functional health in the human body may no longer be found indispensable to health. Moral conditions will be found always harmonious and health-giving. Neither organic inaction nor overaction is beyond God's control. And man will be found normal and natural to changed mortal thought, and therefore more harmonious in his manifestations than he was in the prior states, which human belief created and sanctioned. As human thought changes from one stage to another of conscious pain and painlessness, sorrow and joy, from fear to hope and from faith to understanding, the visible manifestation will at last be man governed by soul, not by material sense. Reflecting God's government, man is self-governed. When subordinate to the divine spirit, man cannot be controlled by sin or death, thus proving our material theories about laws of health to be valueless. The seasons will come and go with changes of time and tide, cold and heat, latitude and longitude. The agriculturalist will find that these changes cannot affect his crops. As a vesture shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. The mariner will have dominion over the atmosphere and the great deep, over the fish of the sea and the fowls of the air. The astronomer will no longer look up to the stars. He will look out from them upon the universe, and the florist will find his flower before its seed. Thus, matter will finally be proved nothing more than a mortal belief, wholly inadequate to affect a man through its supposed organic action or supposed existence. Error will be no longer used in stating truth. The problem of nothingness or dust to dust will be solved, and mortal mind will be without form and void, for mortality will cease when man beholds himself God's reflection, even as man sees his reflection in a glass. All science is divine. Human thought never projected the least portion of true being. Human belief has sought and interpreted in its own way the echo of spirit, and so seems to have reversed it and repeated it materially. But the human mind never produced a real tone nor sent forth a positive sound. The point at issue between Christian science on the one hand and popular theology on the other is this: shall science explain cause and effect as being both natural and spiritual? Or shall all that is beyond the cognizance of the material senses be called supernatural, and be left to the mercy of speculative hypotheses? I have set forth Christian science and its applications to the treatment of disease just as I have discovered them. I have demonstrated through mind the effects of truth on the health, longevity, and morals of men. And I have found nothing in ancient or in modern systems on which to found my own, except the teachings and demonstrations of our great Master and the lives of prophets and apostles. The Bible has been my only authority. I have had no other guide in the straight and narrow way of truth. If Christendom resists the author's application of the word science to Christianity, or questions her use of the word science, she will not therefore lose faith in Christianity, nor will Christianity lose its hold upon her. If God, the all in all, be the creator of the spiritual universe, including man, then everything entitled to a classification as truth or science must be comprised in a knowledge or understanding of God, for there can be nothing beyond illimitable divinity.